Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600, and thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks. Joining us now is Diana Good. She is the executive director of the Connecticut Council on Problem Gambling. Welcome to the show, Diana. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Thanks for being here. We know that Connecticut is really just one step away, waiting for federal approval to allow for online gambling and sports betting. And I think, while I understand this is going to generate a lot of money for the state of Connecticut, I would be remiss not to talk about a big elephant in the room, which is gambling addictions. Diana, could you maybe give us an idea, on average, how many people struggle with gambling addictions?
Sure. I just want to start by saying that the Connecticut Council isn't for or against gambling. We aren't the fun police. We just want to make sure, as gambling becomes easier and more accessible, that there are safeguards in place.
Mm-hmm.
So with all of that said, we estimate that there are about 200,000 people in the state of Connecticut that have a problem with gambling. And the biggest issue that we have right now is that one of the statistics that we use is that if you live within 40 miles of a casino, the odds double that you will have a problem with gambling. And once all of this legalization goes through, people are legitimately going to have a casino in their house because they'll be able to use their phone to gamble. So that really is the big issue for us.
Mm-hmm. So how would you let's start, actually, because, you know, I'm glad that you said that in the very beginning. You know, we often see, let's just say the Connecticut Lottery, for example, who will put, you know, advertisements out there, and they always end it with, please play responsibly. We always hear, please play responsibly. How do you responsibly gamble?
It's such a good question, because it really varies for so many people. What's responsible for me could be so different for someone else. We want to make sure that people gamble within their means. A bunch of years ago, we had Spencer Christian come and talk at our conference, who was a big weatherman for one of the early morning TV shows. Mm-hmm. And he talked about gambling, and at one point he was $80,000 in debt, and then he could pay that off. That's crushing for some of us. That's not within our means at all. Mm-hmm. It was within his means, but not within a normal person's means.
Right.
So we want to make sure that people have a budget. They think about how much time they want to spend gambling. They think about how much money they could potentially lose gambling before they even start gambling. Because some people can afford to lose some money. Some people can't afford to lose anything. And they really need to be careful about that.
So, Diana Good, the executive director of the Connecticut Council on Problem Gambling, first of all, what are signs of a gambling addiction? Because a lot of times people may think at first this is fun and games, but then there's this gray area where it turns into an addiction.
Absolutely. A lot of times people are thinking all the time about gambling, and that's when it becomes a problem. Also, when you can't stop, that's definitely a problem. You know, as we said before, gambling can be fun. There are tons of people that gamble and they have a good time. They stay within their means. They're not obsessed about it. We aren't worried about those people. We're worried about the people that can't stop gambling. You know, we have some stories about people that are working at the casino, and it's really rough on them as dealers because they'll be there. They'll work an 8-hour shift. They'll go home, they'll hang out with their families, they'll sleep, they'll eat, they'll shower. They'll come back, and the same people are sitting at that casino table in the same clothes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a problem. You need to know when you can quit. You need to know that there's help available if you can't quit on your own.
And I know, Diana Good, you had said earlier in this segment that if you live within 40 miles of a casino, how much more likely are you to gamble?
Twice as likely to have a problem with gambling.
Okay. So now that we have phones that are essentially at some point going to allow you to gamble literally as soon as you wake up, maybe in the overnight hours, maybe during work, whatever the case may be, if you are somebody who straddles the line, like, okay, so I will move away from a casino, that solves that problem, but now it's on my phone, how do you handle gambling urges? Because maybe even someone who doesn't know they have an addiction is about to be getting a rude awakening and is probably going to have a lot of urges to gamble when they didn't realize it.
Yeah. there are some apps that you can put on your phone. Gamban is one of them out of the United Kingdom that's wonderful. And so these apps can block gambling sites so that you can't even get on them. We're also really hoping that the lottery and the casinos, as things get onto your phone, will build in safeguards so that if you've been on your phone for a long time gambling, you'll get some warning signs. You'll get some flashes that'll say, take a break. Are you sure you want to keep gambling? We've also worked really hard on a marketing plan with all the operators in Connecticut, both casinos, sports tech, and the lottery, to develop a responsible gambling logo. So we're really hoping that we can splash that all over the state, and especially on your phone when you're gambling and you've been spending a long time there.
And Diana Good, the executive director of the Connecticut Council on Problem Gambling, are there resources right now, if someone is listening, even before gambling becomes available on your cellular devices, is there a way that they can call out, reach out for help right now?
Yes, we have a helpline that's available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And that number is
888-789-7777.
Diana, you can also go to our website, ccpg.org, and you can also do chat and text.
Okay, and that website again is C as in cat, P as in Peter, G.org, and you can go to check that out as well. Diana Good, the executive director of the Connecticut Council on Problem Gambling, thank you so much for coming on. I'd love to have you back on the show really soon.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thanks for reaching out.
Absolutely. You have a great day.
Family, relationships, and personal growth. Professional counselor Julius Dudix is here to help.
Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600.
So in August of 2020, medical journals came out with the term coronavirus rudeness. Apparently, this is a behavior coming out of the pandemic where tempers are flaring, nerves are frazzled, patience is being tested. Staff and colleagues are reporting that while trying to deal with increased workload, stress, and changes in the business operations, they have this new issue, which is angry clients. Now, again, this was in August of 2020 that this term came out. Now, fast forward to June of 2021. People are going back to the workplaces and they're finding that either their customers or even their own colleagues are still experiencing COVID rudeness. So to talk a little bit about this today is, of course, Julius Dudix. Julius, had you ever heard of the term COVID rudeness before I brought it up to you?
Good morning, Melissa. Thanks for having me. Great to talk to you. Honestly, no, I have not. But I do understand that COVID stress is something that's out there right now. And COVID fatigue is another thing that's out there. Melissa, we're running a race. And we are almost, we're at the 50-yard marker, and we're almost finished. And this thing is going to go away soon. But the bottom line is we have to finish strong as a society. Mm-hmm. And we have to learn how to respect one another and how to deal with one another in a healthy way. COVID rudeness is certainly something that is out there. And the reason, I believe, is there's been a lot of anxiety, depression, loss. Behavior for COVID rudeness could be related to the pandemic, job loss, savings, losing my savings, losing a loved one. But the bottom line is a feeling of I'm not in control. And I was in Kohl's yesterday. And for some reason, I was shopping with my wife. And I just started counting the number of people that did not have a mask on. And I got to about 12 and I stopped. You know, we're going to go into a transitional phase. But in that phase, if we're telling ourselves this person next to me doesn't have a mask on, I'm going to get. You know, he doesn't have a mask on. My child's with me, or I'm going to get sick, or I'm going to get hospitalized, or I'm going to be on a respirator, or I'm going to die. If you let your thinking go off in that direction, then your feeling's going to be one of rudeness, anger, and you may do something out of character. It starts with your thinking. You have to think differently so you can feel differently so you can act differently.
So Julius Dudix, our counselor. Yeah, I was going to say our counselor here, Julius Dudix. My question, first of all, I have two-part series question on this. First of all, let's say you are the person who is experiencing COVID rudeness, but you don't realize it. What would you say are some of the biggest triggers proving that you are actually struggling from COVID rudeness and you're attacking people?
Yeah, basically, what you're experiencing is a loss of control in your own demeanor, in your own person. You're not in control. I'm feeling like I'm going to get a little angry. I'm going to get a little maybe a little bit snarky with people. I may say something out of character. I may do something out of character. That behavior itself should show others that you're rude. But do you really know? Do you really see it? Because a lot of times people can act a certain way and not even see that they are acting that way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the other, you know, when a person's rude, they're really being rude to themselves because they're not allowing themselves to be patient and kind, because as I've said before, we like ourselves more as a patient, kind person as opposed to a rude and snarky and angry person.
Now, on the other side of things, Julius, what if you are the one being attacked? So it's interesting, you know, your experience that you shared last week, what actually triggered me to do some research on this was I was at a very nice restaurant in New Haven. The host, who I've gotten to know, very nice man. I mean, this is a very nice restaurant. Great customer service. I mean, I think that's one of the reasons it's so popular. He actually came to me and said that most of the clientele, since being allowed to come back into the restaurant and feeling more comfortable being at more higher capacity numbers, he said most of the clientele acts very entitled, very rude, very much like, you know, just not respectful, like you've been kind of mentioning. And I didn't know what to say to this man. All I could do was be kind myself to him, but my heart broke for him. And I thought, how many other people in customer service are facing this right now? So what do you say to the people who are in this same position where they feel like, my God, it doesn't matter how kind I am, people are just being nasty. And it was never really like this as much before.
Yeah, that's part of anger management as well. But avoid playing into their reality. You know, Melissa, they have a reality. And what they're telling themselves is that, you know, I'm frustrated, I'm angry, and therefore I'm going to be rude, and I'm going to get my point across, and this person's going to put his mask on, and on an airplane you're going to see people fighting because, you know, it's just a crazy, crazy scenario.
Mm-hmm.
But avoid playing into the reality. Don't get drawn in, because once you allow a person to push your buttons and draw you into their rudeness,
mm-hmm.
then that never helps. So don't pay attention to how they make you feel. And listen to your own internal dialogue and talk. Yes, talk to them about their behavior. You could mention something firmly, but make sure that you don't play into what they're experiencing.
Don't bring yourself to their level.
Situation. Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And above all, talk about how you feel. Sometimes you may have to just separate. If you're in a store or if you're in a restaurant and people are coughing and they don't have masks on and you begin thinking, you know, what's going to happen to me? Before you get angry and feel yourself about to get rude, just get up and move your table.
Mm-hmm.
Separate.
Mm-hmm.
But the bottom line is, again, as you said, don't play into their reality. Don't let them push your buttons, kind of a thing.
We're talking this morning to our morning show counselor, Julius Dudix. Go ahead. What were you going to say, Julius?
Well, a lot of it is, again, are you centered and focused on who you are as an individual in terms of God's creation? I mean, God created you. God loves you. God wants to be a part of your life. He wants to help you with this rudeness, this impatience, and his presence in your life can help you. And once you allow God to love you and you allow his spirit and his presence to be within you, he gives you the patience and the wisdom to deal with some of the snarkiness. You know, the Bible says a gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. And it's the way that we treat one another that's going to really be, the telltale at the end of the day. And in doing so, are we really loving ourselves? You know, when we're rude and snarky and angry, we're really attacking ourselves.
Mm.
And that's the issue right there. So a lot of it rolls back to how we think, which governs how we feel, which governs how we behave. And,
mm-hmm.
and that's the three-step process I take my clients through who wrestle with anger management issues or rudeness issues.
Mm-hmm.
The other issue is, do you recognize it? Do you see it? And how do you help a person recognize it?
Right, right. Well, I mean, and Julius, I think you bring up a lot of points that for some may seem like, okay, maybe I just take a step back and I reevaluate where I'm at. But for others, these might be concepts that are brand new to them, like you, like even bringing in God. There are some people who listen this morning who they do not believe in God. They do not believe that he is part of this equation in life. And I think you're one of those staples that could be very helpful to kind of connect people, bring them over that bridge and help with that gap. How can people contact you if they want help with this?
Feel free to make an appointment at 203-243-7714, or you can read about me on Facebook or LinkedIn or www.bark.com.
Julius Dudix, always a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Melissa, for all you do. Have a good day.
Thank you. You too. Well, it's hard to ignore how hot it is and has been the last few days, and it's going to kind of continue. Look, it's June. We're going to go into summer. And while I chuckle at the fact that it is getting warm out there, there is a very serious, not funny thing that happens right around this time, unfortunately. It's not just here in Connecticut. It's across, I would say, the globe, probably. And unfortunately, it is the issue of leaving children in hot cars. Joining me now is Fran Mako of AAA. And Fran, here in Connecticut, we have seen firsthand some horrific cases where kids have been left in hot cars, and it has not ended well.
Yes, that's right. Between 1998 and 2020 in Connecticut, we've had our share of unfortunate deaths. We've had about five. Mm. The most recent incidents occurred in, I think it was 2019 in New Haven, where two young children died. And most of the kids that are that suffer hypothermia, which is a very, very common danger, we also know it as heat stroke, are under the age of three. And, you know, nationally, the numbers are higher. Since 1998, again, there's a group called carsandkids.org. They report since 1998, nearly 1,000 kids nationally have died from vehicular heat stroke. And the weather this past weekend was pretty brutal. It was pretty hot. So think about this. You know, if outside it's a comfy 75 degrees, the air inside your closed vehicle after 10 minutes could hit 94 degrees on a sunny day.
Wow.
After 20 minutes, here the air will hit 104 degrees, which is deadly if a child is asleep or even a pet in the car, because bodies of children tend to heat up three times faster than adults. And a lot of people, you know, good things happen to bad people, as they say. You know, a lot of society is so judgmental, and they question, how could a parent possibly forget their child? Well, it happens, and it happens because generally there's a change of routine. Generally, the parent is, or caregiver is, suffering from a lack of sleep, and they're not concentrating, or they're distracted. And usually, if you're not the primary caregiver, if you're not the one that takes the child to daycare every day or to the doctors, or if there's something different in your routine,
mm-hmm.
your brain tends to suppress your conscious memory,
yes,
concerning crucial details,
mm-hmm.
and you forget. I mean, that's what happened to, I believe, the parent up in Ridgefield.
In Ridgefield.
About 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, that's immediately where I went. 2014, Benjamin. I'll never forget it because I was working at News 12, and I sat in that courtroom and I looked at Ben's father, and I was devastated for him because there was so much attack on that man, and I was heartbroken. That family, I believe, moved out of Connecticut because of how much backlash
yeah.
he got. And you know, Fran, I'm glad you said that, because I know just in the week to week, you know, and I will be honest, because that's how passionate I am and how sad I was for this family. You know, you talk about how, oh, it would never be me. Baloney. I have had multiple times. My husband is very routine, and he goes to pick up my son from my mom's house only one day a week. The other days a week, I pick him up after work.
Yeah.
And there was one time where we swapped the days. My son had stayed on a different day, a long day, and I had picked him up the day before. My husband blanked. I mean, he came home. He's going through his routine. He's sitting down eating dinner. I get out of the shower, and I go, "Where's Chase?" He's like, "What do you mean, where's Chase? It's a Tuesday." I go, "Well, you're supposed to go pick him up." And he, oh my God. And he gets in the car.
And of course,
he's at my parents' house and he's fine. But stop it. I mean, the most responsible parents.
Yeah, it could have been another situation.
Exactly. I mean, and to say that they don't love their child, that's just ridiculous. We as humans are in routine. And should we break it? Of course we should. But naturally, a lot of us do not.
You know, it's funny. My girlfriend was telling me this story. This is going way back now because my daughter is in her 30s. But when she was born, her friend was born. The mother had told me that she would go to work in Shelland. So mm-hmm. She would pick the child up. She would bring the child to a daycare center somewhere in Shelton, and then she would go to work.
Mm-hmm.
And for whatever reason, she got in the car, come home. She got all the way home, and when she got out of the car, she realized, oh, my God, I forgot to pick up
the kid.
Her stuff.
Right.
And she ended up going back to get her. Now, again, the child was in a safe environment, wasn't left in a car. Things could happen. I mean, mm-hmm. It's happened to me. I've never left my child in the car, but I've left her unattended on a sofa when the phone rang, and
right.
I got involved in this conversation, and 20 minutes later somebody goes to me on the phone, "How's the baby?" And I go, "Oh my God." And
right.
I ran into the other room, and
right.
the baby fell asleep sitting up.
Right, right. Well, there you go.
So it's like, I mean, she could have very well rolled off.
Exactly.
But again, if you're a new parent, especially, you know, mm-hmm. you're not used to this. And, you know, the neuroscientists explain it, that your brain is not working properly, especially if you're distracted and you have a lack of sleep.
Or you're tired,
it's
right.
Really,
right.
Yeah, it's really a different routine.
Mm-hmm. So, Fran, I would say, as we talk about routines, we're talking to Fran Mako of AAA, you know, the change of seasons does change your routine. And you know, I know that I have gotten criticism for this in the past, but it works. I will say there are little tips
yeah.
to remember that you have a child in the back seat. And one of the most common, which my husband and I will say, I'm honest, we both have one of Chase's toys in our front seat. We both have one. I could name exactly what it is. We both have a toy in our front seat of our cars because there are studies showing that if you have some kind of a reminder, even if your kid's not in the car, you're going to remember to check every time you get out of your car. Isn't that correct?
That's right. And, you know, the other thing, too, is how many times do kids, little older kids, they're playing. In fact, I just saw an ad on TV last night. They're playing. The parent comes home.
Mm-hmm.
He's greeting his wife.
Yeah.
The kid runs, opens the door, hides in the car, and the parents go into the house. They
right.
don't realize he's in there.
Right.
And I think that's what happened in New Haven. The kids were playing and got locked in the car, and they couldn't get out. But there are tips. There's also some legislation that has been introduced over the years but actually has never gone anywhere. Senator Blumenthal has been very active in trying to get a Hot Cars Act passed.
Yes. Yes, he has.
And in the past, it's gone through the House, but it hasn't gone through the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, again, an act has been reintroduced. I think it was in early May. And now it's requiring new cars to be equipped with some kind of technology
mm-hmm. yep.
to detect the presence of
correct.
Someone inside the car when the engine is off.
Mm-hmm.
They use like a sensor or radar.
They want to put those in new cars. Yep. They want to put them in new models of cars. Yes. Yep.
And,
you're correct.
And these gadgets detect breathing or a pulse.
Mm-hmm.
Other technology uses a camera. Like on my car, it's simply a reminder on the
dashboard.
It beeps.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, check the back seat.
Well, Fran Mako,
again,
go for it.
No, I just can't imagine the horror that people have to experience. when they realize they've made a mistake.
It's way easier for us to sit back and judge and go, it's not going to be me, but then God forbid it is you. It's a horrific, horrific reality that unfortunately some parents have had to go through. And Fran Mako of AAA, I appreciate you bringing this to the forefront on our show and talking about this, especially as we are in the midst of a heat wave right now. Thank you so much.
Okay, take care, guys.
Thanks, you too.